Welcome, 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 everybody, to the 15th episode of Don't Be Broke, Be Woke. I'm your host, Adrian Solomon. Thank you for joining me on another exciting lesson and discussion. I hope everybody is staying safe and warm for those of you who are in cold areas, such as myself. Christmas is upon us, and it's the season of gift giving. And I am looking for an undervalued present, that will yield some huge benefits in 2021 or 2022, potentially. And so this is going to be kind of the part of the conversation for today is how can we find something that's going to give us some money later on? And so as an investor, obviously, your goal should always be to purchase an asset or stock or whichever. And the idea is after that specific purchase over a certain period of time, based on your expectations, you basically are able to yield substantial return or a specific return based on what you had anticipated. So your goal is to always maximize your return, understanding the risk attached to that, right? Meaning like if you're looking to really grow your return, and of course, it all depends on the type of investment that you're making, if it's more risk-averse or moderate or conservative. But if you are really trying to look and to grow your return specifically very fast, you should be prepared to potentially lose some of that money or all of that money pretty fast. Doesn't mean you can't make it back up, but there's always kind of that high-risk, high-reward scenario when it comes time to try to grow some return. But the thrill is there. The thrill of putting your money, knowing like you're putting this money, your expectation is it can go one or two ways. It can either bloom or it can fall flat on its face. But if you want to buy something that's super undervalued, now with the hope that it'll grow and make you more money later, that's value investing. That is a fundamental part of an investor's kind of mindset, which is not always to look at companies that are somewhat expensive or large bland or large cap or whatever. It's looking at companies that are cheap. And cheap doesn't specifically mean the price of the stock, though sometimes it can be. It's just what is the value of the stock in comparison to its peers from a size perspective, or sometimes depending on if it's the industry you're trying to make the parallel in. So value investing is always good. Sometimes people think that value investing is sometimes looking at what stock is actually cheap, like a stock price that's really cheap to buy. And that's not always the case, because you can actually buy a stock that's expensive, but you're still buying a value company because the price of the company's valuation is a lot cheaper than what it's worth compared to earnings and so forth. So I look at value investing kind of like if you're going to go buy a beat down house in an up and coming neighborhood, for example. You know very well that at this current time that you're potentially looking at this house, the valuation of this house is clearly low. But with a couple of changes here and there with the neighborhood and area and city and county and schools, you know, growing or changing within a year or so or whatever, the value of that house will increase exponentially, right? Same thing if you want to invest into a value stock or value company. You're really buying a stock at a bargain price, knowing that it won't stay at that price for too long, right? So it comes back to the discussion of the day, which is I have $500 that I basically made on a side hustle, and I want to put it in the travel industry, right? That has been ravaged by the pandemic since March. And I need to understand where that $500 can actually be best served long-term within the travel industry. Travel industry being airline, cruises, hotels, sometimes even casinos in some places. Airbnb is actually about to go public this month. So Airbnb potentially could be one. The others can be like certain booking sites like Expedia, Booking.com, Priceline, you know, rental car companies, for example. So all those fall into that kind of like travel, hospitality, leisure piece. And so I'm looking at where can I put my money, my own money, And I'm going to go through some of the thought process that I go through for me to basically make the decision that I'm going to make by the end of this. Now, like everything that I discuss, this is going to be my opinion, right? This is based on what I think, what I want to do. You might look at the exact same information and come out with a different conclusion or a different outcome. And that's fine. The idea is to look at every single aspect of what you want to invest in and compare, contrast, and make a decision based on that, right? So let's just be real. The pandemic has ravaged pretty much our entire ways of life and many businesses, industries, and so forth. But man, the travel industry has been particularly hit hard with people not being able to travel, right? If you're on the cruise line, most cruises have been basically sidelined. If you're airline, you've had to cut costs and cut flight destination. Some companies pulling out of regional airports and smaller airports because it didn't make any sense. People weren't traveling to and from those places. If you were hotels, well, obviously people weren't traveling. People weren't going to places. And so all of that actually has suffered. Let's take me, for example. In June of 2020, I was turning 40 and I had a plan. I had a planned birthday in which I was going to fly from Atlanta to Rome, Italy, spend a couple of days there with the family, party, have a good time, and then do a 7-day cruise in the Mediterranean, right? So flight, cruise. By March, that became a problem. It became really problematic. By the beginning of April, well, then it became unrealistic. And so those plans had to be canceled. What happened? Well, the airline gave me a voucher that I can use for 2 years. The cruise line gave me all of my money back with the exception of the deposit that I can then use to book a cruise. Initially, it was until December 31st, 2020. Well, obviously, as things kept moving along and the pandemic kept pushing on, they've moved it and provided me till until May of 2021. I reckon they'll probably push that again, but that is the situation that most airlines and cruises and lodging places like hotels and Airbnb have been impacted by COVID-19 or the pandemic and so forth, right? So when people ask which ones have been hit the hardest, I actually say equally they've been hit the hardest, right? Well, people will say, well, the airlines are better off because people are still flying. Sure, that's the case, but people are still flying at a historically lowest rate than even 9/11, which was huge. And 9/11, you have to understand, mostly impacted the U.S. The pandemic impacted all over the world. And most U.S. airlines, if you wanted to invest in a U.S. airline, most of them, well, the big ones anyways, have huge international fleets and international destinations. And so that impacted them. So let's stick with the airlines and go through that. How have the airlines been impacted and will they ever recover? Well, I believe after 9/11, it took something like 4 to 5 years for airlines to come back to pre-9/11 level, which is people flying at the same rate that they were pre-9/11. What does that mean for COVID? Well, the airlines, even if people like leisurely travel to go see friends and family and some vacation start taking off like it was, there is one piece of the travel that is more important to airlines than you and I traveling to go see friends or grandpa, and that is business travel. Business travel is what makes the airlines money, okay? As a business traveler, I basically traveled maybe 20, 30 times a year. Start multiplying that by the amount of business travelers there are, and by the way, the people who travel maybe 150 times a year. So you can see how that is the actual money that most of these airlines are making on, right? So when you lose that, and I say lose that because is the expectation that most businesses will go back to letting everybody come in the office and people can travel again immediately? Probably not, right? If you start looking at most big companies that have publicly say that they're not going to let people come back in the office until next summer, some say until the end of 2021. That also means that people are not going to travel. Zoom calls, Microsoft Team calls, Slack calls, whatever, will be mostly part of the integration even after COVID, at least on the near term, short term. Long term, it remains to be seen if the business traveler will ever get back to pre-COVID. It may happen. It might be in some industries where it picked back up and others not, right? In my business, I could make calls and basically have face-to-face conversations with my clients, but it makes so much sense to be in front of them and shaking their hands and looking at them in the eyes. But we're not ready for that, right? Even if we could, it's not like pre-pandemic. Sticking with the airlines, the amount of cash that they're burning every month, it's astronomical. Something like $20 to $50 million a month in cash burning. If you think about it, the planes can't just stay on runways. They have to fly, even if there's nobody in them. So they have to find a way to fly. So they're burning fuel, right? Now, they're cutting costs by laying off people, unfortunately. They are cutting off routes to certain places and cities, etc. What's more profitable for them? Where do they get the most demand? And so the idea is the airline industry might shrink a little bit, or at least the capacity in which people travel, where they travel might shrink, which may be a good thing, may not be a good thing. The fact that most of these airlines are doing free cancellations, free moving, like these are all like revenue losing money, right? So I'm not 100% sure that the airlines are the way to go. Like, I don't really believe in the airlines like that. Plus, there's a lot of places I could go without having to fly. I could drive. And if you look at the RV business, and I'm not going to go too much into the RV business, but if you look at the RV business, that business has been booming. Now, coincidentally, it's been booming even pre-pandemic, but now it's booming even more, where people now are renting their RVs to drive certain places to make it a road trip because it's more efficient. They save money on time, going to the airport and flying, the risk of being exposed, then getting to a hotel. Now you have everything within your own piece. So there are some RV companies out there that can be looked at for potential investment. My only concern, though, is that one, they've been kind of booming before, and are they priced appropriately for me to go? I don't know. So you'd have to look and do your research in RV companies. Look at where they were pre-pandemic. Look at them now. If they've continued to explode, you may have already lost the opportunity to invest. Maybe not, right? If you think that they're the future and they'll continue to be the future, it might need for you to go ahead and make some an investment, right? But when it comes to the airlines, I looked at it and I said, let's kind of take a look at what's okay with the airline. So what I was going to do is I was going to actually, instead of investing on a particular airline, because look, like I mentioned, the airlines are a shit show. They're losing money. I don't know which one's going to survive. I do think that domestic airlines like Southwest or potentially Spirit, for example, may have JetBlue, may have a better chance. But at the same time, I'm not taking any chances. So instead, I looked at an ETF, which is an airline exchange traded fund, which provides a diversified exposure to the airline travel industry. And that also includes, just to actually capture the entire business, some airlines, some aircraft manufacturers, some operators, terminal services, etc. So if you decide to do that, Jet is kind of the only airline ETF, kind of the best one, where you're going to get a basket of all the airlines. You're not going to have an ETF for cruises or others just because there's not that many. So now, here's what I looked at. Jets, J-E-T-S, has dramatically underperformed the broader market with total returns over the past 12 months. So if you were to compare Jets to, let's say, the S&P 500 total return, the S&P 500 total return in the past 12 months has been 17.9%. For Jets, it's negative 37, right? Negative 37. So clearly, it has massively underperformed, right? So what does that mean? Let's kind of take a look at what that means. I am going to pull the Jet ETF So as of Friday, December 5th or 4th, I can't believe I'm getting my dates wrong, the Jets ETF closed at a 2351 price point. Okay. On February 12th of this year, it closed at $31.10. So it's down substantially. And the 52-week high, which is, if you were to look at it from year to year, is $32.36. The low is $11.25, which was around the time of the drop of the pandemic at the beginning of the pandemic. So I looked at it and said, okay, the ETF has grown like maybe 30, 40% since, but it's still not where it should be, right? And so looking at 2021, do I expect that ETF to basically surpass the highs of $31, $32? I'm not 100% sure, right? Do I think that most of the companies that are inside that ETF, which is basically Southwest, Delta, United, American Airlines, JetBlue, and some other stuff, some other like Canadian air cargo service, Cargojet, do I think those companies will basically outperform and grow that ETF to be over $32 or even match $32? I don't know. I don't think so, right? So I said, all right, I'm not 100% sure on that. So let's dive into the cruises. Now, to be straightforward, there are really three cruise lines that I would always put my money in, right? One is Royal Caribbean, Norwegian, and Carnival. Carnival being the largest of the world's cruise line. So with that, though, Carnival is probably the one that I immediately said I was not going to go into. Okay. First of all, I've been on Carnival. I'm not a fan. And anytime you say the world's largest, what does that also mean? You got a whole lot of freaking crew ships, right? And in a pandemic, that's not a good thing because you have all that fleet out there and you ain't got nowhere to do with it. So that's a problem. And so I immediately said, I'm not even looking at Carnival because they have a lot of work to do to come out of this positively. All right. So they have to deal with the fleet size, maintenance costs. They've basically got rid of some old vessels. In September, I think they mentioned something about getting rid of an additional 18 or 12% of its active fleet. Then they basically delayed delivery of ships that were under order. And then, of course, there's a suspension on taking cruises, and it's been extended until the end of the year. So I don't know. I don't know. So the one good thing about cruises that I'll say before I get into Norwegian and Royal Caribbean is that people love cruises, specifically old folks. And old folks want to travel. And believe it or not, bookings in regards to like bookings for future cruises is up. Yep, you got it. It's up. Why? Because people are banking on the fact that eventually I'll be able to cruise. This is the difference between the airlines and the cruise, is that on the cruise, the person who's going on the cruise, that is their vacation. That is what they're looking forward to. The airline is just the vehicle to kind of take them to where they're going. Whereas the cruise, that's the idea. So if somebody wanted to go on a cruise, they're going to go on a cruise, right? Now, you could say, well, if I was going to go somewhere, I was going to go somewhere. Sure. But that's not always the case everywhere. Internationally, sure. Domestically, not always the case. If you're going to take a cruise, you're going to take a cruise. Regardless of what type of cruise you were going to take, you're going to take that cruise. Bookings are high. Plus, on the cruise side, these people who've already booked or whatever, they know that they can basically keep that deposit on hand, which the cruises have captured, and they can continue to push that as they want. But the cruises know that these people are there. They're here to stay, right? And so if you were to look at Carnival from a stock price perspective, Carnival is currently trading at $23.45, okay? The 52-week high is $51.94. They fell down at the lowest of the lowest at $7.80 back in March. So they're up something like 30-ish percent since the March lows, but they're still not where they were, which was $51.90 at the January high. So Is there an opportunity for upside? Sure is. But when I compare the business model of Carnival compared to Norwegian or Royal Caribbean, I'm not impressed, right? So if I go to Royal Caribbean's the second, it's the world's second largest cruise line. It basically has done a lot to streamline, modernize its fleet. They basically renegotiated like $2.2 billion of existing debt. They've basically done some stuff like resecured some loans. They've done a lot to basically add substantial cash positions and ability to fund operations pending kind of the revival of ticket sales. So Royal is actually actively working on making sure that they're good, like they're set. Most importantly, they've staved off bankruptcy, which I don't know that some of the others at Carnival will be able to do if this continues for another 6 to 12 months. So because of that, it gives them like room to plan for resuming active cruise operations when that happens. What I really liked with Royal is that they partner with Norwegian Airlines, which I'll talk to in a few, where they basically submitted this 66-page report to the CDC earlier in the summer, giving the industry some recommendation on how to restart the cruises safely. And basically, it includes like stuff like face coverings on board ship, daily temperature checks, and COVID testing. Like those basic stuff. So I think that there are three key observations that's been made on Royal. First, it's relating to the company's ability to quickly restore ships to service. They've basically said that Royal's current layup position would allow it to restart relatively quickly, but with moderately slow measured capacity ramp from there, which is basically said that, look, we're ready to go. We have everything in place as far as the ships are concerned. The second piece which is moving on to the company's prospects for bringing customers on board. Royal Caribbean believes that the lift in financial market has really helped its core customers feel relatively confident, and customers have saved up a lot of 2020 vacation money and are willing to prepay COVID 2019 ticket prices and better. So that is a fact. People have not been traveling. So one, people are fiending to travel, and people are ready to start traveling on something simple where they don't have to think much, like a cruise. Finally, the last observation is regarding onboard safety. I think most cruises can have about 110% occupancy for capacity. They're going to basically operate at 50%. They'll have these extra entertainment show, dining, seatings, different things that they're going to do in the ships to do that. So I looked at Royal Caribbean at a price point, and Royal Caribbean in its 52-week time frame, the highest price was $135.32. They dropped to $19.25 at the depth of the pandemic in March. $19. They are currently trading at $82.73 as of the end of the market close on Friday the 4th. So they have grown a lot since the lows of March, but they're still $50 from the highs of January when they were at $132, right? And just kind of what I just mentioned, they are cheap right now. If you were to look at kind of where their price point is, like the opportunities for growth within that business is tremendous. So I definitely had Royal Caribbean as kind of a potential buy for me as far as where I can put my money, right? So lastly, we're looking at Norwegian. They're the third largest of the world's major cruise line. It did enter the COVID crisis with some really important structural advantages over its competition. One was its fleet was smaller and the vessels were somewhat newer, implying kind of really low cost of maintenance. In addition, there were no launches scheduled until 2022, which also worked to keep costs down. So just like Royal Caribbean that we discussed, Norwegian's really been successful on the money front, the liquidity front. They had, as of June, about $2.5 billion of total money, and they kind of keeping their monthly cash burn target about $160 million. So because they have such a small fleet to maintain, this is really a sustainable situation short term, right? So they've already started upgrading their ships. They've put like HEPA filters in the ventilation system to meet some higher health guidelines. This was kind of outlined in that report that they sent to the CDC, which they did jointly with Royal Caribbean. So looking at that, I looked at Norwegian. I was like, whoa, Norwegian is doing a lot. They're a smaller company. They're well run. They have a lot of money. They're probably the one that, if this pandemic were to last another year, could really punch it in the face for at least another year because they had the money to sustain such a thing. And if you were to look at Norwegian from a stock price perspective, the 52-week high was $59.78, and the low was $7.03. And right now, they're trading at $26.30 as of the close on December 4th. So they've obviously recovered since the lows in March. And honestly, in November, they were up 37% in November. So what does that tell you? Just like Royal Caribbean, they're a pretty undervalued company with a nice balance sheet, at least for now, that when the vaccines are there and people can start traveling, people are going to start taking Norwegian. Why? One, they're a newer fleet. They have all the systems integrated for people to feel safer. People are not going to want to take some beaten down ship, potentially on Carnival, for example. They're going to want newer, state-of-the-art cruises in which they feel comfortable in, right? Just to step back a little bit, Ryanair, which is one of the biggest airlines in Europe, they're a low-cost airline, think of them like Southwest, they've ordered a bunch of 737 MAXs from Boeing. Why? Well, they want newer fleet. They want a newer fleet because people will want new stuff, things that they feel more comfortable in from a safety and air quality perspective instead of some of the old beat-down stuff that people may think about pre-pandemic. So I had Norwegian and Royal Caribbean at two possible options for me to put my money and look at potentially growing that money in 2021 and potentially 2022. By the way, if you had invested in the cruise lines in March, you would have made a lot of money because they were down and they were never going to be down for long because anytime news of vaccine and so forth come out, the stock goes up because any travel stock or these type of stocks go up after that, right? So this is my research. I always say for you to go ahead and do your own because it helps you identify where you want to put your money and are you comfortable with that? So I know I talked about the airlines and the cruises. So as you guys are well aware, I tend to stay away from individual stocks because it's more risky. There's a lot more work to go involved into it. And so if I am going to go in an individual stock, I like to look at a stock that might look at a variety of different things. So that way, I'm not a prisoner of one avenue. So outside of the airlines and the cruises, there have been travel stocks that not only recovered from the pandemic meltdown in March, but are actually positive on the year. Two of the most kind of notable companies are Expedia Group and Booking Holdings, which is booking.com. They both have gone positive on the year in November. What does that mean in the year? That means they had gone down in March and they've recovered all those losses to the point where they're higher than where they were in January or whatever the high was. So just like when I went over this exercise with Royal, Norwegian, and Carnival, where those guys have gone down, they've gone up, but they haven't recovered all of the losses from that low. Booking Holdings and Expedia have both not only recovered it, but now are over where they were at those specific times. So that's positive. Now, by the way, Booking Holdings owns Priceline and Kayak. So if you look at those two companies, look, without a doubt, revenues have been destroyed this year. They both quickly raise billions early to weather whatever the negative storm was going to be. In addition, both companies took considerable cutting strategies, including, unfortunately, cutting their workforce. So while it may seem that the airline stocks and cruises have tripped up over the last few months, travel services stocks like these have flourished. One of the reasons for that is, to my point in regards to individual, instead of looking at, okay, where company, you can say, what is a company that embellish all of these things in one? Travel, cruises, rental car, hotels, right? It's things like Expedia and Booking.com and Booking Holdings. Now, the question is, which one will be better? Well, if you were to look at a trend, both stocks kind of actually on a chart trend, they kind of look the same. The main difference for me is, since Booking.com owns Priceline and Kayak, which has a larger footprint in Europe, I feel like you can see kind of a uptrend as more and more lockdowns are loosened in Europe. And so it can be a little bit more vibrant. Expedia, on the other hand, does own Orbitz and VRBO, which actually has a larger focus on the US market. But what does that mean as the virus is starting to tip back up here in the US and all this other stuff, right? So what's to look at? Well, you can look at one of the two and say, this is where I want to go in 2021 and above. And so what did Adrian do? What did I do? Well, when I looked at stocks like Expedia, Booking, the cruises, and the airlines, I basically looked at it and said, they all gave me headaches. They all gave me heartburns. I really didn't know where to go. However, I did make a decision and said, well, I was definitely staying away from the airlines just because I just don't know. And the business model there just seems like it's going to be a while for me before I see substantial returns, an industry that's kind of on shaky grounds. So no airlines for me. Did I want to go into one of the cruises, which, by the way, I had already mentioned that I was not going to be in Carnival. So that left Royal Caribbean and Norwegian. And so those were the two. And then, of course, I was going to look at something like Expedia and Booking.com as the other option. So after I was done looking at all four of these particular stock prices, I decided to where I could get the most upside for my money. Expedia and Booking, though they have done well, like, I don't know where else they're going to go from here. Can they continue to grow? They can. They sure can. But because they've not only recovered their losses and they're now positive, I'm looking at it as my opportunity there might be limited. And so I focus on Norwegian and Royal Caribbean. And with that, I made a decision to go with Royal Caribbean. Why? Well, when I looked at Royal Caribbean, one, I kind of like them as a cruise line, like compared to the others. Well, let me just say, I've never been on Norwegian, so I don't want to bash them in any way, shape, or form, but I like Royal Caribbean. The other thing is, from a price perspective and a balance sheet perspective, they look like the most ready. They look like they had all their stuff together to basically take care of that with the size of their fleet, the adjustment that they've done, and they are really undervalued as a business. And so because of that, I just looked at, okay, if I decide to put my $500 in Royal Caribbean and Royal Caribbean gets back to the price that they were pre-pandemic, and I'm not even talking about getting back to positive, then that's a huge win for me. It's a huge win. And just so you know, Royal Caribbean is up 300% from its March lows, 300%. And so I think it's worth it. The only issue with Royal Caribbean and even potentially Norwegian is that the current price for both Royal and Norwegian, which mostly Royal, because I'll stick with that since that's the one I decided to go in, is that the price now that's $80-something is really already baking in a lot of stuff like vaccine and people traveling again. So it cannot afford any more bad news. They need people to start taking cruises so they can basically start showing how much money they're making. Only then will the stock price really shot up again. I don't anticipate that happening until mid-2021, late-2021. So for now, I am putting my $500 in Royal Caribbean, knowing that in the short term, I might be taking some losses, but understanding that the cruise industry is not going anywhere. Royal Caribbean is not going anywhere. And so I'm banking on the fact that in 12 to 18 to 24 months, I can double, if not triple, my return in Royal Caribbean. So today was a different lesson, more so because this is I don't want to say this is how people should be looking at how to invest, but you really shouldn't be looking at, you know, a specific company and price point to decide if that's the way. But what is the upside? How does the financials look? There's a lot more into this than just picking a company by name. And depending on the amount of money that you're playing with, you might want to look around within that industry itself to see what's the best one to look at, what's the best one to be into. And so people might look and say, well, why didn't you go into Norwegian? I could have gone into Norwegian. I could have closed my eyes and gone into Norwegian. I don't think I would have been that upset about it. I just picked Royal more so because I feel like I'm a little closer to it since I like it more. And that's fine. Part of it is what you know, what you're comfortable with. It's not a loss. Some people might actually go with Carnival with the idea that, yeah, people are banking on Carnival to fail and they may actually kill it. That's also fine. Your own individual investment strategy is yours and yours only. The decision that you make should be yours. Don't let other people basically go into that, because if they're not right, you have to live with their decisions. Whereas if you're wrong or right, you can be more comfortable with the decision that you've made, right? So that's why you do your research, you look, and then you make the decision based on what you're more comfortable with. So because of that, I went with Royal Caribbean, and I'm fine with that. So I'll look and see how Royal Caribbean does. And then, you know, maybe every month I'll discuss my side hustle investment into Royal Caribbean and see, did I make a good investment or not? So wait and see. But until next time, guys, remember, don't be broke, stay woke. Talk to you guys later.